Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, Hurricane Florence. She started as a monster, an unprecedented storm. She is still unprecedented in many ways, but she's calmed down just a bit in some ways. Still, major damage along the coast is expected, as are tons of rain extending from the coast through the Midlands of South Carolina and through Charlotte to the mountains. Our roundtable of reporters is set to detail that and some of the other week's other stories this week as well, if we ever get to them. They include WFAE's Nick DeLacanal, who has been following preparations for Florence here in Charlotte. Welcome. Mm-hmm. Sean Flynn's been doing the same. He's the managing editor for Spectrum News on television. Thank
Good
you for
here.
Joining us. And the Charlotte Observer's education reporter, Ann Doss Helms, has also been pressed into hurricane duty, and she joins us too.
I've Welcome. Courageously come in, even though Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools have been closed for 2 days now.
Which we'll talk about. We'll hear from them in a moment at length, and we hope to get updates on conditions on both North and South Carolina beaches from reporters stationed there. But we begin with an update on what Hurricane Florence has been up to since late yesterday afternoon, where she is now, where she's likely to go, and what we can expect from this enormous storm. And we'll get all of that information from WCNC-TV's chief meteorologist, Brad Panovich. Brad, welcome back. He joins us by Skype. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. Where is Florence right now, 9:08 a.m. Friday morning, and what is she up to?
Well, Florence is basically sitting just south of Wilmington, North Carolina, just about 20 miles south of downtown Wilmington. And it's been sitting in the general area now for about 12 hours. It really has not moved much since last night. The winds have been gusting over 100 miles per hour in and around the Wilmington area, and it's only slowly moving to the west, maybe the southwest just a hair, but it's slightly southwest by, you know, about 5 miles per hour. So it is not really moving all that much, and it's going to continue to drift towards the southwest for most of today. So we're in the Charlotte area. We're not going to see any rain today. It's going to be cloudy, breezy, and kind of muggy. Our real impacts are going to be the second phase of this storm as it moves inland, and that phase is going to be the heavy rain that's going to start moving in starting Saturday, but likely could last all the way into Monday, Mike.
Okay. And I read this morning that the hurricane made landfall at about 7:15 this morning near Wrightsville Beach in North Carolina with wind speeds of about 90 miles an hour. Those of us who lived through Hurricane Hugo know that we had 85 mile per hour winds here, so we know what that's like. But it's been threatening that area of the coastline since late yesterday afternoon. Did they notice landfall?
Yeah, probably not. It's probably just been a constant wind and rain there. And even though the wind has come down, I think yesterday I ran into a lot of this. People were like thinking that the storm was weakening. But one of the things that happened with this storm, the intensity in the middle, the wind speeds went down slightly from a category 2 to a 1. Mm-hmm. But the storm surge and the wind field, which is the size of the wind field, actually increased when this happened. This is something that happens at landfall. The storm actually got bigger physically. The tropical storm force winds now extend out 195 miles. And that basically became like a larger blade on a bulldozer, which allowed it to push more water to the coast. And so we saw record storm surge like in areas like New Bern that was over 10 feet and Emerald Isle, which approached about 8 to 9 feet. So the storm surge in some locations is going to set records for parts of the southeastern North Carolina coast.
Yeah, earlier in the week, we were talking about this being a Category 4 hurricane and the damage it could do if it had come ashore as a Category 4. Then it was downgraded to 2, then to a 1. And forecasters all over TV yesterday were saying, do not pay attention to the category numbers. It's not about the category. It's about the wind and about the duration of the wind and the storm surge, the flooding, the rain.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about the impact. Sometimes we get caught up in the labels of things and we kind of lose track of what the impacts were. The impacts really didn't change with that downgrade. Certainly, if you were near the center, the lower winds helped you a little bit from a wind destruction standpoint. But the thing about hurricanes is their number one killer is storm surge and water. And we're going to find out, unfortunately, the freshwater flooding issue is going to become a big part of this storm as it moves inland and spreads these record setting rainfall amounts from the coast all the way into the Charlotte region. So water is our number one concern with these systems, because if we think about just last year, Hurricane Harvey, I'd probably be hard-pressed to find anyone who could tell me where that actually made landfall. Right. And I will tell you, it was Rockport, Texas, as a strong category for hurricane.
Well, had it come ashore as a category two, it would have had wind speeds of at least 105 miles per hour. And had it come ashore and moved on, there would have been damage. There would have been storm surge. Yeah. This is a category one. It's got wind speeds of 90 miles per hour, but it's going to linger and drop rain. And that wind is going to continue, one would presume, for much of the weekend. What kind of damage can that do, these sustained, never-stopping winds of 90 miles an hour?
It's certainly going to work over the trees, and you're going to see a lot of tree damage. We've seen a lot of roof damage. That's the thing. A 90-mile-an-hour wind is, you know, EF1 tornado wind, Mike. And instead of lasting for a few seconds or a minute, it's lasting for 24 hours. So that eventually works over structures when you get that sustained wind for that length of time. And trees in particular, because the wind will come from the northeast, then it's going to swing around to the southeast. The soil gets wet. The trees just, they're going to be coming down left and right. So you're going to see pretty widespread destruction because of the duration of the winds on the coast. And then the storm surge, because it's lasting so long, each high tide has come in. The tide can't go back out at low tide. So then the subsequent high tide that comes along next is even higher. So it's this cumulative effect that we have with the water that really ends up causing the devastating flooding.
And yesterday, the governor made several statements, among them that all North Carolinians needed to be vigilant about this storm.
Make no mistake, whether the eye of the storm makes landfall along our shores or further south, we're on the wrong side of this thing. This storm will bring destruction to North Carolina.
Let's talk about the wrong side of a hurricane, which is the right side of the hurricane, if I'm not mistaken, because that's the side that has the brunt force activity and it spins off tornadoes. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So when we're talking about the right side or the east side, it's kind of depends on which way the storm is moving. And in this case, it's moving to the west, which means anything on the north side of the track or the east side of the track, if you're looking at a compass, is going to cause the worst damage, because you take into effect the forward speed and the counterclockwise spin of the storm. That brings in the highest moisture amounts, the strongest winds, and the biggest threat for tornadoes. And unfortunately for the Charlotte area, that's the side we're going to be on most of this weekend into early Monday.
What kind of tornadic activity has developed because of this storm so far? Do you know?
So far, not much. We've seen a couple tornadoes in areas around Carteret County, which is where Morehead City is, and then New Hanover County, and then we've seen some near the Outer Banks. But so far, the tornado threat has been relatively low, but that could change dramatically as the storm moves inland and other effects, frictional effects with the land, start causing storms to spin up a little bit quicker.
Well, this storm is supposed to meander along the coastline, move south towards South Carolina's beaches, and then move inland to a track. The last track I saw brought it just south of Columbia, but its area of influence stretches well beyond Charlotte as it goes past Columbia. And then it heads up into the mountains toward Asheville and beyond and loops around toward the northeast part of the United States. So that puts us, as you say, on the tornado side of the hurricane. How likely are we to be affected, do you think, by that? And what areas of our listening area might be affected over the weekend by tornadoes?
We could see just about any area see a tornado. And I think the higher threat for tornadoes will actually be the later we get into the weekend. So Sunday into Monday, we could even see some on Saturday. But Sunday into Monday looks to be the higher threat, especially areas from Charlotte up to Greensboro and then back into the mountains, because we'll be in those outer rain bands initially. And those are typically the ones that start spinning up tornadoes a little bit quicker. And even on Tuesday, we'll have to watch as the storm is up in the Ohio Valley, moving away, as you mentioned. And we're going to get some breaks in the clouds, which will be great because the sun will come out. But that sun could heat up the atmosphere and we could see some pop-up showers develop and storms that have tornadoes in them as well. But based on the threats right now, the tornado threat, believe it or not, might be our least of our concern as we go through the weekend when you start talking about the amount of rain that we're going to see in our area into early Monday.
So let's talk about that. How much rain is Charlotte now predicted to get, or the Charlotte region predicted to get? And let's talk about it from here out to the mountains and here down through York County and into South Carolina.
Sure. So around Charlotte, you're looking at widespread, probably 4 to 8 inches of rain with localized amounts approaching a foot. Somebody's going to get double digit inches of rain out of the system. It's just a matter of where that sets up. And it's going to be a heavy rain band that's going to set up on the north side of the circulation. And we don't really know where that's going to set up, except for that it's going to be somewhere between about Statesville and Rock Hill. So we know it's going to set up in there as we go, especially into Sunday into early Monday. But the scary part for the mountains is as the storm moves west, that heavy rain band is going to become perpendicular to the Blue Ridge Mountains, which means it's going to hit it at a right angle. And that's going to cause uplift, and you're going to see tremendous amounts of rainfall on those eastern and southeastern facing slopes in the North Carolina mountains, which will enhance the rainfall and also cause devastating flooding and landslides. And then that water eventually has to come downstream. So if there's a third phase of this storm, it's going to be the river flooding that could occur on the Catawba chain and all the other river basins as we go into next week, into next weekend.
So put 8 inches of rain in Charlotte into perspective. Have we had storms that dump that much rain on Charlotte in such a short amount of time? We're talking about 48 hours worth of, maybe 72 hours worth of rain.
So 8 inches would put us at the most rainfall that we've seen in Charlotte in a 48-hour period. It's pretty close to another system in 2008. The remnants of Tropical Storm Fay dumped about 8 inches of rain over a 48-hour period. The 24-hour record for Charlotte is right around 6 inches. So those are the type of numbers. You're looking at an event that is at the very highest of our record books for rainfall in that period of time. And in both of those instances, I can tell you that the record in Fay, we had widespread urban flooding all across Charlotte. In fact, there was a big sinkhole out on Independence. A hotel was almost swallowed up by a sinkhole. Independence was shut down. I think a couple interstates were shut down with flooding. So it caused a lot of disruption to the Charlotte area.
And so I want to warn people, if you know you live in flood-prone areas, and this was stressed yesterday on this program by the Charlotte Fire Chief, you need to be vigilant. You need to be ready to go, and you need to be watching creeks that are running through your property or culverts that tend to back up and flood. You need to be aware of those throughout this weekend because it's very likely to happen. We only have about a minute left here, Brad, but... And I know that weather is not climate, but this was a big, big storm. And everybody's been saying even now it is an unprecedented storm. Is this the shape of things to come because of climate change?
You know, it's hard to pin one event on climate change, but it seems like we're seeing more events like this, which would be an indication. And that's the way you have to look at it. It's not a singular event. It's several events and the frequency intensity events.
Well, that we keep having these 500-year storms and these horrible fires that we've never experienced before. And now these enormous hurricanes. This could have been a Category 4. It could have been a Category 5. Are we going to see a Category 6 someday?
It'll be a good question to see if that ever gets to that point. I think, to me, the thing that you definitely could tie to climate change in these setups is the heavy rain events. One thing that we know from research is that heavy rain events and these record floods are directly caused by a warming climate. The atmosphere holds more moisture in these setups. And if we get 30 inches of rain in the southeastern part of the state, you're looking at basically what amounts to a 1,000-year rainfall event.
Wow.
And this is just about 2 years removed from another 1,000-year rain event when we had Hurricane Matthew skirt the coast.
Brad Panovich is chief meteorologist at WCNC-TV NBC6. Thank you for joining us, Brad. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The News Roundup continues with reports from the coast next. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is our special edition of the Local News Roundup here on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. WFAE's Nick DeLocanal. Been very quiet here, but he's here with us.
I'm
from
here.
WFAE News, Sean Flynn from Spectrum News, and Doss Helms from the Charlotte Observer with us in the studio. But we want to check in on conditions now at the coast or near the coast. And to help us with that, we are joined by Reuben Jones, a reporter from Spectrum News who has been working on the North Carolina coastline. And joining us from South Carolina is Anna Douglas with the Charlotte Observer. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Let me start with you, Ruben, because I think you have been in Kinston and you are on the way to New Bern now. Is that correct?
We actually just got to New Bern about 30 minutes ago, Mike, and it's quite a sight down here. First of all, it was quite the drive over on 70, no cars on the road, and a little dicey at some point, but we did get down here, and it's quite the scene. A lot of flooding, a lot of downed trees, and there were parts of this downtown area where you do not want to go because it's not safe.
Hmm. And New Bern is supposed to have gotten is near the epicenter of the brunt of all this, I'm told. And the issue, one of the issues for that part of the state of North Carolina is the Neuse River. They've already experienced problems with storm surge backing up into the Neuse, and the Neuse there's no place for the drainage along that river system to go. Is that adding to the woes already, or is that to come, or do you know?
It's a little of both, I think. They've already had significant flooding, but I was just talking to a neighbor who said she's seen more flooding this time than previous times, and she said it's probably only going to get worse the next couple of days because when you have a hurricane, you've got flash flooding, but then the flooding that comes from the river sometimes takes a day or two to get there, so it's not necessarily just a short-term issue for the residents down here in the downtown area.
And right now, Anna, you're in Myrtle Beach, right?
Yes.
And so far, you haven't gotten much of this storm except for, some wind gusts and some rain. Is that right?
That's right. We're waiting.
So there have been minor gusts of wind. There are some trees down across the Grand Strand. What are people down there saying? Myrtle Beach is pretty much evacuated, isn't it?
The local government officials here have been saying for the last 24 to 48 hours that they're pleased with the amount of people who did evacuate. It's certainly not 100% compliant. But, you know, look, just to give you an example of how sometimes you have to take that information with a grain of salt, yesterday a colleague of mine and myself ran down to Polly's Island, which is about 25 miles south of Myrtle Beach on the coast. And there were two Army National Guardsmen and police chiefs sitting there with the roads closed, and they said everybody's left the island. But we kind of wandered around a little bit, and we found two or three families who, in fact, were hanging out. So, you know, evacuations went pretty well. A lot of people did evacuate, but there are plenty of people still here.
So what's the forecast today for Myrtle Beach and that area?
Well, this hurricane is 60 miles or less away from us right now. Obviously, it's a big storm. It's, you know, moving at about 6 miles per hour toward us. We're expecting heavy rainfall to move in over the next couple of hours and not stop for a long time. Already there's 10,000-plus people in Horry County, where Myrtle Beach is, without power.
And they're expecting, I'm told, catastrophic flooding at some point because of this storm in the Myrtle Beach area. Is that still accurate?
That is what we continue to hear this morning, yes.
Now, some areas have mandatory evacuations along the coastline. Other areas, evacuations seem to be optional. And as you said just a second ago, even though they evacuated some areas, people have lingered and stayed behind because they're just people who are diehards. They're not going to go no matter what happens. And they've been told repeatedly that if you don't go and you find yourself in trouble, we're not coming for you. But already they have broken that rule in some areas because they've already rescued, Reuben, I think about 100 people in your area where you are near New Bern, and 100 more are awaiting help. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And you mentioned the evacuation orders. We started our week in Atlantic Beach, which, if you've been there before, is surrounded by the ocean, surrounded by the bay. And that was a mandatory evacuation order. I spoke with the police chief, who said, frankly, he was kind of nervous to stay on the island. They were planning to maybe leave if it got too bad, but I spoke with him last night on the phone. He said, no, we're sitting here in the dark. We've got no power. So far, minor damage, but, you know, we're here. But, of course, they're not going to be responding to much if that wind gets too high. It's just too dangerous for them.
Do we have any idea how many people in either of the areas in which you are or either in any of the areas along the coast that you know about, how many people decided not to leave? Do we have a count on those people? Do we know?
I don't have a count.
Okay. Would it be accurate?
It's hard to know. Yeah.
Go ahead. Would it be accurate to say that Myrtle Beach in South Carolina and Wrightsville Beach, which is where the storm came ashore, and New Bern in that area are the places along the coast that are likely to get the worst damage, or will it simply be spread down the coast into South Carolina? Because this storm's going to sit there for quite a while. Reuben.
I think New Bern is definitely going to be a hard-hit area just because of the Neuse River and the flooding we've seen with that. But I'm really interested to see what happens with Morehead City and Atlantic Beach. If we can make our way back over there, we're going to try to. Because I think that damage is going to be just so bad because they are so close to the coast. And what's different about this part of the state, eastern central North Carolina versus down in Wilmington or the Outer Banks, is the towns here are pretty small. So you can't really go somewhere necessarily and find a big building to be safe. These are pretty small buildings, so they're more susceptible to the damage, I think.
Did you have a chance, either of you, to ask about or do you know what officials are anticipating in terms of damage and recovery once these storms have passed? Myrtle Beach was decimated many, many, many years ago by a hurricane, Anna. What are officials telling you there about what they're anticipating?
A long recovery, a costly recovery. When you're thinking about life-threatening conditions, that's the first thing that you think about is people and the harm that can come to them. But, of course, there is also property to think of, and flooding especially is the main concern. And to answer your question from earlier, it is expected that rainfall and storm surge on the Grand Strand of South Carolina is expected to be somewhat widespread and certainly not limited to a couple of blocks off the shoreline.
Before I let you go, I have to ask Reuben Jones the question that everybody wants to know, because everybody watches these storms unfold on television and they see reporters standing in the drenching rain and the high winds barely able to stand up. And I'm sure that you're going to be asked to do that if you haven't already done it. What is that like, and do you enjoy it?
Well, honestly, this was my first hurricane. I've covered tornado recoveries and blizzards. This is the first time doing a hurricane, and it's a little nerve-wracking early on, and it's a hard process finding a safe spot that works. But, there's a little bit of a thrill to it when you do it, you know?
Okay.
Not too bad.
Yeah, stay inside, stay dry, don't go outside, but I'll do it for you. Reuben Jones, reporter for Spectrum News, who's in New Bern this morning. Stay safe, both of you. Anna Douglas, reporter for the Charlotte Observer. She's in Myrtle Beach. Thank you both for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Both governors of North and South Carolina and forecasters have talked about extreme concerns about power outages. And here's North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
Everyone needs to be prepared for power outages that could last for days and maybe even a week or longer.
That probably includes us in Charlotte or in our Charlotte listening area. Randy Wheelis is with us now. Randy Wheelis is a spokesperson for Duke Energy. Randy, thank you for joining us. How many people are out of power that are served by Duke Energy right now?
Right now, when I left my desk, it looked around 300,000. But that's just a snapshot in time as the storm's coming in through. But, you know, like you would have guessed, the Carteret, Craven, New Hanover counties, really between 80% and 90% of our customers are without power right now.
Because I've gotten three figures here. You just told me 300,000. I had a printed figure of 200,000. And evidently power outages throughout North Carolina are already above $455,000. I guess some 455,000 people. I guess that doesn't mean, I guess that means that not all those people are your customers, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Like I said, our outage numbers today will be jumping around. I think when I came in a few hours ago, it was more like 260,000. So 300,000 is a good number right this second, but I'd say by noon, it may be a completely different number.
Okay. That number comes, that 455,000 number comes from the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. How many crews are standing by? I know you can't work now. It would be stupid to work now, but how many crews are standing by along the coast and in areas that this storm will cross, getting ready to work?
So we've got a workforce of about 20,000 that are ready to jump on power restoration as soon as the storm passes. I'd say half of that is from other utilities in other states. I think I saw something that's like 15 other states. Yesterday I was at Ovens Auditorium in Charlotte. There was a large contingent from Florida Power and Light in Florida who are really ready to go, but as you said, we need this storm to pass through so that we can get out and starting working safely.
And are most of your crews deployed to coastal areas, or have you held some in reserve for this part of the country and up toward the mountains as well?
Right. So like I said, I mean, I think I was with a Florida Power and Light contingent in Charlotte yesterday, but we also have large staging areas in Greensboro, Florence, probably a little closer to the coast. I'm not quite sure, in the coastal areas. But all of those crews know they may be dispatched right there, or they may be dispatched somewhere else. I mean, the crew from Florida yesterday could easily in a day or two be going to, you know, Darlington, South Carolina. It just depends on where the storm hits. But they're a lot closer now than they would be if they were in Florida or Wisconsin or Kentucky or Ohio or somewhere like that. They're ready to go now.
And depending on the impact of the storm, I understand that as many as 1 to 3 million customers in the Carolinas could be without power. How does that compare to when Hugo came through?
You know, Hugo, I think, was a little over a million, and I think we'll beat that. I mean, the range right now is 1 to 3 million, and that is a big number, and I think we'll be within that range. From early indications. Wow. You know, it could be Hugo-like, maybe even more.
Sean Flynn is here from Spectrum News. He's been sitting quietly in the studio this whole time. You wanted to add something to
that? Yeah, Randy, some big concerns that some people have been bringing up to me are two things. One, the safety of the nuclear power plants. There are multiple ones across the Carolinas. And also, I know you've personally been working a lot with renewables, solar panels. I know North Carolina is now the second largest state in terms of solar power production. Obviously, the utmost of points, importance is the nuclear power plants. But what's your concern level on the solar?
So, you know, the as it's supposed to do, when a hurricane force wind comes near a nuclear plant, it shuts down. So our Brunswick plant, which is on the coast, that shut down, I think, yesterday. And the structure itself is extremely robust. So I don't think we have a problem with wind. It's gone through a few hurricanes in the past. But it has shut down, and that's just normal. I think sometimes I've read articles that seem like that's an unusual event. It's not. When a hurricane force wind is coming toward a nuclear plant, it automatically shuts down, and it will continue to be shut down until it's safe to get
And safety procedures at these plants have been updated since Fukushima, and I believe the plant that you're talking about has the GE reactor in it, which is the same reactor that Fukushima had in it, and one of the problems in Japan was the fact that when the storm came through, there was a tsunami, wasn't the storm. When the tsunami came through, it took power out at the power plant. So the power plant could not operate properly to protect the fuel rods. Has that been addressed? I mean, it seems oxymoronic that a power plant would have no power.
Yeah, a lot of our power plants have backup generation, either diesel generators or mainly diesel generators. So it has backup power. But you're right, in Fukushima, it was really almost a tidal wave that caused the real problem here, not the high winds.
Right.
Our plants can definitely stand high winds into the 100, almost 200 mile an hour. So that is, I think, we feel very confident in our nuclear plants right now.
As far as solar,
just jump on that real quick, Sean.
Sure.
If those facilities are in the path of the storm, we will de-energize them. I think the bigger issue with solar farms isn't so much the wind flying solar panels away, it's the flooding. We've had some of these, you got to think, these are on eastern North Carolina, and you get 20 inches mm-hmm. of rain, you know, your solar facility may be underwater. So we will de-energize them as they come in the path of the storm, as we have done with Hurricane Matthew. We did the same.
Talk to me about the lakes, because you control the lake levels and you use the dams along Lake Norman and Lake Wylie to generate electric power. But we're going to get a ton of rain, unprecedented rainfall here in Charlotte, which will fill those lakes to capacity, no doubt, very quickly, and more rains coming down from the mountains to fill those lakes. How do you react to that? What do you do? Are you going to have to open the floodgates?
Well, what we've been doing, I mean, we knew this storm was coming, so really for the past week, we've been moving a lot of water through our dams along the Catawba River, and I saw someone's picture today, and I mean, you could tell it was 2 or 3 feet below what it normally was in this person's backyard, so that allows us to take a lot of water in, with especially Lake Norman being so big. You can only plan as much as you can. You're right. I mean, when we see 20 or 40 inches of rain, I don't know if there's any plan for that. But, you know, we've done as much as we can to be prepared for that rain, no matter how much we get.
If you had to open the floodgates to full level, what would that mean for people along the river?
Well, the problem is that you've got it's really connected chain. So you could run the floodgates at Lake Norman, but you're just going to people who are downstream at Mountain Island Lake would get flooded out. So it's a little bit of a balancing act. You can't just, you know, clear one lake because then you're going to flood another.
Right. And how quickly can you react to the conditions on the ground, so to speak?
Well, I mean, we have 24-hour control of those dams and the floodgates, so we can act quickly. And we keep, you know, we have our own team of meteorologists who are telling us where the rain will be coming, how much they're expecting. So we've got a lot of information on our side. But, you know, Mother Nature has a lot of impact as well.
During Hugo, this area of our listening area in Charlotte was without power for 2 to 3 weeks in some cases. I didn't have it for 19 days. So what could that happen again with this storm?
It could happen. I mean, there are areas that could be without power for a week or two or maybe more. It's just hard to say today what it looks like. But when you look at someone like Carteret and Craven County that are without power now, the storm's still there. They've got, you know, massive water. I think people are worried about just getting out alive if they're there. As
sure.
You said, the earlier guest talking about rescues going on. You know, power in those areas could be out a week or two.
And when you're talking about the kind of destruction you're talking about along the coastline and along the path of this hurricane, and you only have a finite number of people who can repair these power lines, that's going to take a long time. People, are you telling people to stock up on batteries and non-perishable food items and things like that?
Right, yes. Yeah, this week we've been telling people to be prepared for an outage and maybe a long outage and think about, am I safe being here? Should I go to family member, friends, or should I host family member and friends and stock
Randy,
up on batteries?
Randy, I have 20 seconds. Are there priority areas that get reconnected first? Is there a process for restoring power, literally 10 to 15 seconds?
The biggest thing is we go transmission towers that's going to hold 10,000 customers, and then we work from the substation out. We give priority to hospitals and water treatment facilities that are very critical to everyone in the region.
Randy Wheelis is with Duke Energy. Thank you for taking time to join us. I appreciate it. More of the News Roundup in just a moment. Stay with us. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's a special edition of our local News Roundup with our roundtable of reporters who have yet to have a chance to talk, but they're here, and they're going to talk now. Nick DeLacanal is with us from our WFAE newsroom, and Ann Doss Helms is here from the Charlotte Observer. Sean Flynn from Spectrum News in Charlotte, where he is the managing editor. CMS closed schools starting yesterday, and they're closed today. Is that because they were worried about the storm, or was that because they needed to open 5 high schools to be shelters for evacuees and local residents who needed a place to go if they have to get out of their homes?
Well, the answer seems to be both. They have not given a clear. I specifically asked, if we had not done the shelters, would you have closed on Thursday? And Tracy Russ, the CMS spokesman, said, I don't know. There are just so many variables. They always try to make the decision as early as they can so families can prepare. This has a huge ripple effect when you think about 148,000 kids, child care needs to be lined up, work schedules disrupted, hourly people don't get paid when they close schools, so they try to make their decision. They, at that point, were setting up and actually had opened some shelters in 5 large high schools. That clearly was a factor. People are concerned when you have a flood of strangers, and they're not bad people, but they're a slice of humanity you could have.
But other school systems closed as well. CMS is not alone, but I don't think there is a rule or a law or a regulation that says you can't have a shelter in a school while school's in session.
No, in fact, the Red Cross specifically said we did not consider that, you know, a call to close schools. The county actually has other shelter options, and I think that's going to be interesting to see because it doesn't sound like the need for shelter is going to be gone by Monday.
No.
So they could go to, I think, some recreation centers, but there was some concern about whether they were in flood areas.
And let's talk about where these shelters are. The high school shelter, the high schools that have been opened are East Mecklenburg High. This is really easy. It's all the mix.
Yeah.
East Mecklenburg High, South Mecklenburg High, North Mecklenburg High, West Mecklenburg High, and Ardrey Kill. How did they sneak in there? And, of course, the Red
Actually,
Cross.
I thought South Mech, but not West Mech.
Both of them,
West
actually.
Bank.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, was the
and Ardrickell, yeah.
Okay, right. And Ardrickell. And then there's the Red Cross shelters, the men's shelter, the Salvation Army shelters, et cetera. And they are open for people who are coming here because they've been evacuated from the coastline. But over this weekend, with this considerable amount of rainfall, one would presume that local people will need to take advantage of these.
Yeah, in fact, I've actually spent some time at the shelter at East Mecklenburg. So I was there last night, and there are people there that are from the coast. I talked with one family that had driven out 5 hours from the Wilmington area. So it was a mom, her two sons, and their two guinea pigs. And the shelters are animal-friendly, so they were able to accommodate
the pigs. Glad
you
brought that up. You can bring your pets.
You absolutely can.
I want to make a point of saying that yesterday on this program.
Yes.
You can bring your pets.
But in addition, there are also people who are locals who are taking advantage of these shelters. I also talked with a woman who lives in Charlotte, but her home is underneath two very large old oak trees. And, you know, there's been a big worry about trees falling down, especially with all the rain and the wind. So she said that she just felt safer coming to one of the shelters. So she was there with her two grandkids. So
yeah, yeah. And we spoke with one gentleman who said that his home here in Charlotte is in a floodplain, and it floods frequently. So he just thought to go ahead and get out.
Yeah. And I want to come back to this pet thing, because they made a point. The mayor was here yesterday along with the fire chief, and they made a point of saying that these shelters are pet friendly. You can bring your pets, because a lot of people will not leave their pets behind.
That's right, but you should not do that.
That's right. So bring them. If you need the shelter, bring them with you. Now, because some people were a little upset that schools closed yesterday when it was sunny and breezy and quite lovely, actually. What do we know about Monday or Tuesday of next week in terms of schools opening?
We probably know a little more about what it's looking like than they did on Wednesday. And if I had school-age children, I would certainly be lining up childcare for Monday. I mean, from all we've just been talking about, it does not sound like the roads, the power supply, you know. I mean, if
and the rains
one school's in trouble, they could open the district without it. But if you start seeing lots of schools that don't have power, lots of homes that are in flooded areas, if it's not safe for the buses to be on the road, I just think the odds are very slim that school will open on Monday.
And you've been reporting, Nick, on these shelters, both in the high schools and the other shelters that have been opened around town.
Right.
And there's a call that has gone out for extra help because they need people to help them run these things.
Yeah, that's right. The Red Cross is looking for extra volunteers to help staff the shelters, although it does look like they are pretty well staffed from the shelters that I visited. As far as the local homeless shelters go, I know both the Men's Shelter of Charlotte and the Salvation Army Shelter for Women and Children, they're both bringing in extra cots to accommodate people over the weekend. And I know the women's shelter was having a tough time finding a generator, but they have secured one, so that's good. The men's shelter, though, I think that they don't, so that might be a worry if the power goes out.
So we have this immense amount of rain, this record-setting amount of rain on tap here coming to our environs this weekend, one presumes. But we've also had the ground already saturated. So if you live in flood-prone areas, most likely you will see flooding.
You have to also consider this week we've received rain quite a bit through just our normal thunderstorms. So the ground is already wet and saturated. So when you start adding additional, even 4 to 8 inches, areas that typically flood will flood. If we're talking the 8 to 12 inches, areas that you may not have seen flood in past history probably will flood.
That's Charlotte Fire Chief Reginald Johnson. He seems fairly certain, as did Brad Panovich earlier. Sean, has that word gotten out?
Oh, absolutely. I definitely think a lot of people are, especially in those the flood-prone areas, I think a lot of people are heeding that advice. I already know several people in Charlotte have gotten out of Charlotte. They've evacuated Charlotte going to other areas. I think one of the things that it's not like we're going to get that hit of the storm and then it's going to be gone. Just if you listen to what Brad said, this thing's going to circle around. It's going to hit the mountain chain and then almost circle around Charlotte. So we could see days of this. And then all that water that is going to be dumping in the mountains probably next week, that's all going to be flowing downhill towards Charlotte through the Catawba River and then in other parts of the listening area through the Yadkin River. So that's all going to be coming, and that'll cause additional flooding next week.
Even after the storm is gone and you've been lulled into this false sense of security.
Yes, I remember previous storms in the 15 years I've been here. There's been twice a hurricane's gone and it's gone through the mountain area. And then 5-6 days later, all of a sudden we're getting reports of flooding along Mountain Island Lake because, as Randy with Duke Energy said, they have to slowly push that water downstream. And it takes days to get down here.
So Fire Chief Reginald Johnson and Mayor Vi Lyles were on the program yesterday talking about preparations for Florence here, and they were concerned about something else, our trees.
When we say this is a potential flood event, and we say that our tree roots may be shallow and they may come down over an electrical line, we don't know where that's going to happen, but it's going to happen.
Just because we don't have 80-mile-per-hour winds doesn't mean we're going to see less trees down. The ground is already saturated. 30 to 35-mile-per-hour winds, we will see trees down. We will lose power in certain parts of the city.
I think the biggest thing that we, again, have to face is our tree canopy may be endangered by this storm.
Right.
And if we lose trees and they take down power lines, it takes Duke Energy a little while to respond.
So that's why we're concerned. We're concerned about trees because they take down power lines, also because they do extensive damage to homes if they happen to fall on homes and endanger lives.
And we've already seen a couple of large willow oak trees come down this morning by Myers Park High School. Colony Road was closed, and we haven't even started seeing really any strong winds. If you just look at any thunderstorm we have, we're almost always over in the Myers Park neighborhood, right. Certain areas of West Charlotte because of these willow oaks that were planted a century ago just toppling over.
I want to come back to something I said yesterday. I think, and you were here certainly during Hugo. I'm not sure you were.
Sean. I wasn't here yet.
1989, these willow oaks that are all over town have extremely, extremely shallow roots. They don't go down a foot, some of them. And they're old, and many of them are diseased, and wind and saturated ground is a recipe for these trees to topple over. And we lost so many trees during Hugo that have long-lasting effects, not just because we lose beauty and tree canopy, but because they're everywhere. You can't drive.
Yeah, and I just remember, you know, for a couple of years afterward, you would drive by wooded areas because, of course, they clear the roads first, but where you just had what used to be stands of trees, you would just have kind of piles of dead wood sitting
right
there.
For years,
yeah,
we have that. Yes, absolutely. People who are not here during... I keep harping on Hugo because it was an extraordinary experience that most people don't go through.
And I think that was the first time that most of us realized that an inland hurricane can really be a hurricane.
So be careful of the trees. I don't know what you can do about it, because if you have a tree near your house, just be aware that it's a problem. It could be a problem. One of the things that I know that you wanted to talk about briefly was the fact that there are wild horses along the coastline, and one of the things that the Observer reported this week is that people were concerned about them, but that they've lived through these hurricanes many times in the past, and that we should just let them be, and they know how to deal. Really? Horses know how to deal with this?
I think what they didn't want to say is, if it's bad enough, some of them are going to die. I mean, but these are wild horses, you know, and they talk about wild horses can't drag me. You can't drag wild horses somewhere else, so relocating them is just not terribly practical.
So what have emergency officials been saying to people about this? I come back to Hugo again. We did not understand in advance of Hugo, and even though I talked to meteorologists every day on the radio, they kept saying, you don't understand, it's going to be horrible, you don't understand. I didn't understand until it happened. So what are emergency preparedness people telling our listeners, people in Charlotte, to do to be prepared?
Well, they are talking about a lot of things, but making sure you have your emergency supply to last for 3 to 5 days. There was a serious run on water. I was at Target 2 days ago at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they had one pallet, and it was almost a mob scene, everybody running to get water, which Charlotte Water made sure to point out to me the other day after a tweet I sent out, that they say, be prepared, but don't worry, because they've got it under control. They have backups for the backups of the backups,
is what
they said.
The water will be fine unless you have a well
right,
and need electric power to operate it, but or unless a tree rips up your feed line into your house.
They did say hyperlocal could be an issue.
A couple of other news stories before we run out of time. We have 2 minutes left. They had a first look at the toll rates at a meeting last night up near Huntersville, I believe. Mm-hmm. First time they've ever talked about what it will cost. What do we know?
Well, they said for the first 6 months, a trip will cost just under $7. That's for 6 months.
I thought they were saying during the peak traffic time, the full trip would be about $13 and could rise to $19. I heard that on WFAE, so it must be true.
Absolutely true. We also had a big announcement yesterday with regard to the Charlotte Chamber and the Charlotte Regional Partnership. That partnership is run by Ronnie Bryant. The chamber is run by Bob Morgan. They are merging. Why?
Well, we've heard for years that, you know, these are a part of the big four, Charlotte Center City Partners, the Chambers, CRVA, and the Regional Partnership. And those four, they call them the four-headed monsters, help really to drive a lot of the policy here in Charlotte. They're the ones who help push bonds and things like that. We heard as recently as last year that Charlotte Regional Partnership was having some challenges, including their one of their executives having to leave. So we've heard kind of rumblings of this for a while, but this is big news that they're going to combine and merge. And they did want to point out that while they're looking for a new CEO, the current CEOs are still potential options.
And although we have 30 seconds left, Anne, we talked about this last week when you weren't here. Some parents have lost trust in CMS because they didn't let parents know about the lead found in certain water fountains at schools. But you said that this could be an opportunity for Clayton Wilcox.
He is trying to convince everyone that they're going to be honest about it. And there are a lot of parents and community groups saying, we're going to hold your feet to the fire.
We're going to talk to WCNC-TV's chief meteorologist, Brad Panovich, who I wanted to do a recheck-in with him before we left today, to talk about when we in Charlotte are going to start feeling the effects of Hurricane Florence.
Well, Mike, we're looking at probably the rain starting later tonight. I'm thinking overnight hours we'll start to see some showers move in. Today, it's just going to be about some breezy conditions, but the heavy stuff for Charlotte really starts to crank up as we go through Saturday into Saturday night and then Sunday and into Monday. So as I talked about, this is going to be a long duration event. The worst weather likely will be during the weekend into early Monday. And, you know, by the time this is all said and done, we could be looking at rainfall amounts across the Charlotte area, 4 to 8 inches, with localized amounts approaching 10 inches of rain. That would certainly put this in one of the highest rain events in Charlotte's history. I think the hardest part to figure out now is where that heavy rain band sets up. We know it's going to be somewhere across the area. It's probably going to be either right over Charlotte or just to the north. The other threat, we've got some wind out there. We're going to have, you know, 30 to 40 mile an hour winds coupled with wet ground bringing down the trees, likely some power lines. And then we've got the brief tornado spin ups that we could see at any time as well.
So you're talking about rain bands, but when we put all those bands together, will our impression be throughout the weekend that we're in a continuous rainstorm?
No, that's a good point. I think we're basically going to see waves of rain. There will be breaks at times. I think we will see a break here and there, and then we'll see rain for 3 or 4 hours and then another break. So it'll come at us in waves. You will have some breaks in between.
And we have listeners in the mountains, and they go into South Carolina, down through the Midlands, and off to the east in North Carolina as well. So you've talked a lot about Charlotte. What about those areas?
Well, pretty much everybody from Charlotte East is going to see heavy rain. And then the mountains, that's a good point about the mountains, because I think that's an area that hasn't been talked about enough, because that heavy rain is going to move into the mountains mainly Sunday into Monday. And because of the lift of the mountains, the topography, it could enhance the rainfall there. And we could see totals up there around a foot in some locations. And then that brings in the mudslide and landslide threat as well.
Right. And of course, all that water has to come downhill through Charlotte to the coastline, right?
Yeah, so late in the week, probably mid to late week, we'll have another phase of the storm after it's gone, the river flooding, as the water starts coming downstream, and we'll have the rivers rising into next weekend.
Wow. Any final words of wisdom for people living in our listening area, North or South Carolina, here before you go?
Don't be fooled by the fact that the storm is weakening as it moves inland. The rain threat is just going up, and it's going to take a while to get here. So don't let your guard down. This is really going to be a delayed impact for us, and it will last well into next week.
Hey, Brad, thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it. Brad Panovich is the chief meteorologist for WCNC-TV. I know you'll be working all weekend, right?
I sure will be.
A word to the wise, the website for emergency info here in our listening area is charlottenc.gov. You can also register for alerts on your smartphone by texting CHARMEC to 888-777. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.